final scene is both revered and reviled. From huge hair and neon flash to high kicks and higher tragedy. It left an indelible mark on the landscape of pop culture and heavy metal. In a time of larger-than-life geopolitics,
Mr. Gorbachev, tear down this wall.
And Gordon Gekko telling us that greed is good.
Greed is good.
It reflected an era of commercialism, cheap thrills, and distraction that embodied the decade. To say the glam metal scene was Rome at its peak is only a slight understatement. Fueled by waist-high piles of cocaine and an endless supply of alcohol and cheap sex, glam metal promised a good fucking time. And here's the thing, everyone ate it up.
Fuck yeah, we did.
Even if behind the scenes, it was imploding under the weight of its own success. But look past the spandex and hairspray, and you'll find a promise to the everyman. A promise that said, if all you got in your pocket is a dollar and a dream, you can fucking have it all and party your brains out getting it. So without further ado, and on behalf of the Druids, we'd like to welcome you to Heavy Metal Sex Magic, How Glam Metal Put a Hex on the 80s. Storm Ruler, can you take me high enough? I don't know. Cinderella might be too deep of a reference, but I had a hell of a lot of fun diving into all of this.
Oh man, that was perfect. I mean, fuck Cinderella, what a band, man. That was
you know, there is a lot of research.
That was great.
Cinderella, I mean, I sat here for a while trying to figure out what would be the nice little intro call out, but all right, Franny. I'm going to get us back and get my... I always am a slow starter.
Just like in board games.
I'm a slow starter just like in board games, but just like in board games, I close fucking strong. Franny, my goodness, it's been nearly 2 months and we have been doing just a ridiculous amount of deep diving into a genre of heavy metal that I had a surprising good time with, but I'm more excited just to see you welcome the Droomies back into the coven and kick off another fantastic fucking episode. Franny, what up, my Druid, from another fluid.
Holy fuck, dude, is it good to be back in the booth with you, my brother. Holy shit. It's been, as you said, kind of a little bit of a hiatus with vacations and illnesses and what have you, but we're back at it, and yeah, I agree with you, man. I am fucking stoked to the bone for this episode. I was super excited when we kind of landed on this topic, and then, yeah, just researching it. Holy fuck, I got more and more excited and giddy. I could feel my hair growing longer and poofier as I did more research for this topic. It was fantastic.
Can you specify which hair? Because dependent on the type of hair metal and the climate you're in, the body responds how it responds. That's all I'm saying. But Cinderella,
say a little bit of column A, column B.
Column A, column B. I know whether it's Cinderella or Quiet Riot or, of course, Rat, who is going to be basically the mascot of this episode. Whether it's any of those three or a dozen more, just doing the research on getting ready for the show has been a ton of fun. And it was a needed distraction because, as Franny alluded to, there's some hospital time, there are some vacations, and we've had just life. As all of you do, but we're back, and that's the important thing here. And I want to just give everyone a little tiny recap on some of what's been going on in the druidic world between Wrecker and Franny here. Well, I just got back from New Orleans and had... I mean, Franny talked up New Orleans to me like nobody's business, regaling me with tales on how it was his favorite city. Franny, it did not disappoint.
I'm glad, man. I'm glad. When you were telling me about all the fun you had down there after I picked you up from the airport, I was so happy to hear that because, yeah, to this day, that's still one of my favorite places to go. It's just so fun, so much to do, so much food, so much history and culture to ingest. It's insane.
The food's out of control. I felt like biting into a beignet, like getting a cum shot from God right down my throat. Like if this is what God's nut tastes like, heaven better have fucking knee pads because I'm never standing. Beignets are fantastic. Beignets are phenomenal.
Oh my God.
I don't know what
dude.
Else I can say. New Orleans is a beautiful city. It's enchanting. It's full of mystery. It was misty at night and I felt like I was Jack the Ripper walking through old London town. I had a fun time playing Frogger, trying to cross the street without stepping in human poop.
Yo, that's a real thing, man.
That's a real thing, man. There's a reason they're hosing down the sidewalk every morning in New Orleans. Yeah. I felt like I unlocked a new level of decadence when I bit into a soft-shell crab po'boy for the first time in my life.
Oh, my God. Those soft-shell crab in general, just fucking wow.
Unbelievable. It was such a revelation that when I bit into that crab's computer, I felt like I could taste 2,000 years of crustaceous ancestors all the way back to the great King Crab Schmorglug in his salted castle. That's how good it was. That's how good the fucking food in New Orleans is. Incredible jazz, incredible food, people that are warm and welcoming. I can't wait to go back. So, Franny, that's a little tiding from the big sleazy. Oh, and I understand you had your own little trip.
Yeah. The wife and I, who is still here as accepted by her, referred to Mrs. Franny. Her and I went to Cancun and did a little resort action, and that was incredible. You know, usually when we go on vacations, it's always go, go, go. We're doing this, we're doing that, we're going to see this thing and that thing. But this time it was literally just bumming my ass on the beach, looking at the ocean, listening to some fucking kick-ass tunes and reading books. It was fantastic. Just
kicking back.
Oh, I'm God,
biting
was
into
that
Schmorglug's
needed.
Ancestors. You're taking in the summer breeze down south of the border. Fantastic time. We're both restored. And on the other side of all of this fun, the show has been staring us down, calling to us. And before we launch into the main topic proper, let's just quickly call out a couple upcoming shows and massive festivals that your boys, the Druids, have locked and loaded here in the year of our Lord 2024. Next Monday, I'm going to be seeing Municipal Waste, Ghoul, and one of my personal darlings, Necrot, and a little band I'm not really familiar with, crossover band Dead Heat. All this is going down next week. I'm really excited, so you can expect on our next episode, you're going to hear all about it. I'm trying to get Franny out there, man. We've also got burgeoning thrash metal band from the Twin Cities, Telekinetic Overdrive TKO, playing what I want to say is a seventh or eighth show, refining their sound. And we also got, I'm beyond excited for this, Hell's Heroes, March 21st to the 23rd, the White Oak Music Hall in Houston, Texas. Man. Just an absolutely, Franny, an incredibly stacked lineup, incredibly legendary lineup. We've got all sorts of names that are it's the who's who of bands I've wanted to see, and I'm locked and loaded for it here as we head into the back half of March. Get your asses to Hell's Heroes.
Oh, man, I'm so jealous. I want to go to that so bad, but as we've alluded to in the past, you know, just life and work gets in the way, and I unfortunately was not able to procure tickets or the time off to go to that. So you got Hell's Heroes coming up, but let's not forget, come May, we got fucking Milwaukee Metal Fest again, and the lineup is looking crazy for that again. I'm super excited. I mean, we got Night Demon. You're going to be seeing Night Demon twice this year, which is nuts. I mean, we got all sorts of insane ass bands. I mean, I Am Morbid, Death to All, like all sorts of these classic seminal bands. I'm fucking Blind Guardian, bro. Holy fucking shit. Am I just
put some
frothing.
Respect on their name, because I love Blind Guardian. So yeah, I'm with you, man. You've got your own little things in the docket, and we're going to be bringing a ton of coverage. I mean, to this day, our recap of the Milwaukee Metal Fest last season remains one of our more popular pieces of content. So we know our listeners want to hear from these festivals, and we're going to bring it to you.
Yep, absolutely. And I can't wait for it, man. It's going to be awesome. All right. So that's a little bit of the kind of upcoming whatnots we got going on. But Wrecker, do you know what time it is?
It's 14 days past the vernal equinox, I believe.
Ain't wrong.
And now for another druidic discovery.
That's right, you heard it. It's time for more druidic discoveries. Wrecker, I know you got some stuff locked and loaded. What do you got for us this week?
Fucking Franny hard stopping me here. All right. Well, we've been following the Mandrake Project for I don't know what reason for like 4 episodes. So we might as well just keep it up and follow this thing full circle, like the circle of life here. But Bruce Dickinson as we have mentioned, has got the Mandrake Project coming out, and he has released his second single, Rain on the Graves, which is now also a video, and you can check it out right now. The album, The Mandrake Project, is set to be released March 1st, so you got your last opportunity here to give a millionaire more money. But I love Iron Maiden, so I'm still going to keep talking about it. And check this out. If you want to pre-order right now, you've got a lot of options, including the custom version with the comic book that we've talked about. You'll have to go to the creatively titled website, themandrakeproject.com, which just feels like... It just feels like a boomer naming his own website exactly what it is. And I get it, but I just feel like there is a meeting at some point where someone's like, Bruce, we can't call the fucking website the Mandrake Project. But anyway. Also, just check out the striking pose that the man strikes. He cuts a good figure at 69 or I don't know how old he is. But I love Bruce Dickinson. Going to keep hitting you with these Mandrake Project updates. Franny, what are you bringing us?
Oh, man, I got some fucking killer news for you guys. First off, one of the darlings of the show, Unto Others, has signed with Century Media and is currently in studio working on a new motherfucking album. Holy balls, I'm excited for it. And they said that you can expect a slew of new music this year of our Lord 2024. Good God, I can't wait because there's such thing as too much Unto Others.
That's a huge fucking headline for this show.
Oh my God, is it ever? I mean, like, I can't tell you how many times we fawned over these guys, and the fact that they're signed with Century Media and working on a new album now. Oh God, I'm so excited.
I feel to me this should be a compliment, but some people don't like the Eagles, but I feel like Unto Others has like Eagles level of appeal to even non-metal fans. Any person I play them to, they get over on. Everyone enjoys them.
100%, man. I agree with that. 100%. Every person I've showed Unto Others on is just like, this is actually pretty good. I'm like, yeah, I know. It's fucking fantastic. Amazing. Another darling of the show, Warbringer, they're going to be working on the follow-up to probably one of my favorite albums of theirs, Weapons of Tomorrow. Hopefully that'll be coming out this year. I'm, again, incredibly excited for that because I fucking love Warbringer. Saw him last year at Milwaukee Metal Fest and just lost my shit over him.
Yeah, I remember that. You got yourself into quite the little fugue state when you saw them. You looked like a changed person after you saw them.
It was unreal, man. I was so excited. I felt like
you went through some sort of tribal coming of age ritual when you saw that. You went in a boy and you walked out silverback. Came out with an extra set of nut hair when you left that show.
Just one. Yeah, pubes started growing pubes.
Yeah. You had to say pubes. You doubled the one and walked out with two.
Oh, fuck. All right. And the last little bit I got for you, Wrecker. What do you know about high fashion?
Well, I mean, I used to shop at Kohl's, but I don't anymore. So I feel like I know and I'm learning.
Are you familiar with the brand Balenciaga?
Is that a bologna or some kind of cured sausage?
I think it's something like of an offshoot of that, yeah. But basically, they're a super high-end fashion brand, and they have come out with their own metal-inspired fashion brand. So I'm sharing you the pictures right now. And this shit is crazy, right? So it's inspired by metal music, and they got all sorts of stuff ranging from... You know, backpacks, leather jackets, socks. I mean, the leather jacket goes for $8,950, you know, pretty cheap. And a pair of socks, I mean, you can get those for easy $150. So here's what we're looking at here. And as you can see, all of it looks like fucking garbage. It's fucking terrible. Good Lord.
It's so they're selling basically, if you don't want to put patches on shit yourself.
Yeah, and you know the fucked up thing about this, and the thing that really fucking chaps my ass, right, is that they have, it's just their name in like a bunch of different fonts and stuff like that, like ripping off like other bands' fonts.
One thing that's really interesting is like metal fashion and culture is kind of being co-opted, and of course many other communities have experienced this. I mean, we could talk about blues and all sorts of music that's been co-opted, and heavy metal is kind of an offshoot of that too, but now... It's interesting to see heavy metal culture being co-opted and used by groups of folks that are kind of like not really invested in the inner culture of it.
Yeah, it's crazy. I feel like it's such a missed opportunity because they could have like gotten bands, you know, they could have licensed like the band's logos or something like that. It still would have been Balenciaga, but like I feel like I don't know. I feel like they should have just not just slapped their name on it in a bunch of different bullshit fonts and I don't know. It's just frustrating seeing that kind of stuff.
I will shake my fist at the clouds, too. I know what you're saying. It's like, if you're going to me, I could get into this whole topic of like, you know, it's similar to like Metalocalypse. It's a great show. And all these people love Death Clock, but it's an imitation of an art that they won't touch. And so that's the best way I can say why sometimes it grinds my gears. But hey, look, man, this is how we know you're getting really old. Because you're bringing your fucking fashion complaints to the show.
I know, but it just really chapped my ass, I guess. I just...
You can't talk about the merits of fanny packs and get mad about this. That's all I can tell you.
I sure as hell can. They're utilitarian, man. That's just a fucking...
The sheer utility is awe-inspiring.
Yeah, exactly, man. It's crazy.
Now, this is the portion of the show where you pull out your fucking dirty little mirror. You maybe bust up a couple of nice clean lines, rip those rails, and get ready to do some fucking business because we are at the topic du jour, how glam metal put a hex on the 80s, heavy metal sex magic, and there's nothing left to it but to do it.
I think you mean nothing left to do it but to toot it, sir.
In the context of this episode, I think I'm going to roll with that because nothing... No genre better typified the excess and the fast-charging pace of the 80s, I mean straight up, than glam metal. And in so many ways, this music that we're here to talk about was just a reflection of this time that it came from. And it totally put a hex on the rock and roll public at large. People just could not get enough of it. And here's the thing for any record executives, they took notice of that. But before I move any further... I have said already a few times this episode that glam metal put a hex on the 80s. And so for a moment, I just want to define what the fuck is a hex, because as you know, the shit matters. A hex, an evil spirit bringing bad luck and trouble.
That's pretty poignant, yeah, because seeing how the culture of the time, especially surrounding parents, and we'll touch on this a little later, reacted to it as if it was like something from born of Satan.
What a weird time. People were so obsessed with the devil. And like the 80s is not that long ago.
So wild.
I mean, we think of like puritanical fervor and you think of like Salem. No, you could just go to Miami in the 80s and people sure, would think you were in a cultish devil group. For listening to fucking, you know, any of the bands, aforementioned bands we're going to talk about, with the exception, of course, of God's Only Striper, who, those little bumblebee looking motherfuckers, they had something going on, Striper.
They sure as fuck did, man. I fucking love Striper. If you don't like Striper, get the fuck out.
Yeah, if you don't like Striper, leave the hall. That's all I got to say. Well, glam metal, before we move further, a little context about it. And I think I should also just get this out of the way as an annoying sort of asterisk. When I say glam metal, when Franny says glam metal... We may say hair metal at times. These terms are kind of used interchangeably, even though I fully acknowledge that a lot of bands are called hair metal simply because they had fucking long hair. If you're listening to this show, you don't need me to explain a lot of this shit. So just let's coast past labels that are used incorrectly. We're saying glam metal unless we fuck up and say hair metal.
It's all interchangeable basically at this point.
Well, I think we should place this style of music in the context of its time and the 80s music scene. I mean, dollars to donuts, it's got to be one of the most creative decades in the history of music, not just with heavy metal, but all over the fucking place.
Oh my God, absolutely. You got bands experimenting with like the reverberated drum sounds that like took over the fucking 80s, especially in pop music. I mean, there was so much experimentation and groundbreaking stuff that happened during 80s music culture. It's genuinely insane, man.
You got new wave, you got punk, you got hardcore all coming together. You got hip hop really coming into its own at the same time. And amid all of this is also the hair metal scene, the glam metal scene rising to prominence. So this is a really cool time if you're into experimentation in music. And the 80s is really where we see the birth of this genre, and it's pulling influences from glam rock, you know, stuff like David Bowie at times mm-hmm. with some of his work, punk, and even traditional metal. So when we think about the ancestors of what would become glam metal, for me, Franny, I'm thinking of some of my favorite bands like Queen, The Showmanship of Freddie Mercury, my goodness.
Oh, yeah.
David Bowie, the New York Dolls, and Alice Cooper. I think you could even make a case for Alice Cooper having sort of a line in to this formation of glam metal.
Oh, you can't dispute that, man. You can't dispute that. It comes from like the showmanship, the crazy stage presence, the makeup, all that stuff. You can't deny that Alice Cooper was an influence on glam metal as a whole.
You know, by the early 80s, a genre starts to emerge, and with some pretty big heavy hitters that come to be associated with the genre. So Motley Crue is one that you have to talk about. Absolutely legendary. But there's others. You got Night Ranger. You've got Rat, who I fucking adore. Goddamn Rat is better than whatever you listen to. We're going to get to more of that later. But you got Quiet Riot. You got Twisted Sister. You got New Jersey's Own. Bon John Voney? Bon John Voney. Dr. Fauci. Bon Volvi? You know the guy. But you also got Dokken. I mean, we could name...
Oh, hell yeah, dude.
Dokken Crush. Dokken Crush. I want, like, a freshly minted Buick or Oldsmobile or something. Just mint from the 80s, maybe like a Monte Carlo. And just blast Dokken going down the block at, like, 14 miles dude. Under the speed limit. Fantastic.
Hell yeah. Oh, that'd be
fucking
so
like
awesome.
Maroon and cream interior. Fucking
hell yeah.
Automatic smokeless ashtray and holy
with
shit.
With the faux leather top, just like a candy red paint job with like the faux leather top. Fucking sign me up, bro.
I mean, as you can see, something's been happening to me and Franny as we research this episode.
Oh, hard
a certain amount of decadence is now in us that I don't know, Franny. I'm a little nervous that we may be changed, but we're going to find out. So talking about the sound, well, first of all, it's often pretty upbeat. This is shit that's fun to listen to. There may not always be a lot of lyrical depth. It's hyper poppy. It's accessible. It's got massive hooks. And it's a lot of fucking fun, if I'm being honest. Like, it's corny as shit, but it's also a lot of fun.
You can't deny that. 80s music in general, especially glam metal, is incredibly fun to listen to. Even for some of the bands that you might not like, it's still fucking fun to listen to. The music is just fucking good.
I typically start to tap out on some of the ballads that are a little bit rough, but I mean, look, I'm a classic country fan, so I can't say a lot when it comes to just sappy music. So we've talked about the sound, Franny. I think we should just unpack the image a little bit because it's such a crucial part of the whole package. And also why it was able to ensnare everyone in its goddamn coke-filled gloves. But the glam look. It's really important if you're in this scene and in this sound, you got to curate a loud, brash, sexy sometimes image. I feel like everything that we saw with the glam metal scene was sort of some sort of precursor, primordial soup for what would basically be everybody on Jerry Springer just a few years later. And there's a distinct overlap between like mob wife look and the glam look that's going on.
I kinda didn't.
You're talking
even
big
think
hair.
Of that.
You're talking makeup. Huge proud perms. Proud fucking perms.
Fucking A. Oh,
tasteful
you can hide
feathering.
A chinchilla in them things, man. Holy
you,
shit.
I mean, the hair. But Kelly Bundy. Kelly Bundy was something else.
Oh,
and I'm just going to.
Oh, God.
Good Lord. What an impact she had in my youth.
Fucking ain't right, man.
But this look of big hair, makeup, huge perms, hairspray, all this shit had a big impact on culture. It's just outlandish fashion. You've got bands wearing lingerie. You've got bands wearing spandex and leather print, studs and spikes. Franny, just a whole lot of ridiculous shit.
Oh, my God. It was genuinely... I mean, even without the music, if you took the music out and you just looked at the band, you would there's no way you couldn't be enamored with them, right? Like, there's no way.
A lot of fucking top hats. I don't really know what that's about,
what
but there's
the
a
fuck?
Lot of top hats.
So wild.
Vests with no shirts underneath was a common, apparently it was a really comfortable thing to wear.
Yeah, the vest with no shirts, and then like the poofy, like Austin Powers, like cravat things.
Terrible.
You know what I'm talking about?
Terrible.
Oh, God. But there was so much of it going on. It's insane.
Just strong visual aesthetics in general. A lot of neon theatricality, fucking high kicks. And some of these band photos, and I say this as a Manowar fan, but some of these band photos are absolutely hilarious. And if you ever, you know, just want to remember that you're maybe taking yourself a little bit too fucking seriously, just look at some glam metal bands and you'll realize life is short. Have some fucking fun.
All right, Wrecker. So we kind of covered like the importance of the image in glam metal, right? But now we need to talk about probably one of the most important aspects of this fucking episode, okay? And that is why Rat is better than any of your favorite death metal bands you're listening to currently today.
Rat's better than your favorite band, period.
100%. 100%. I cannot enunciate this enough. I cannot make the importance of this known more than why Rat is so fucking awesome and how hard they fucking crush. And we're going to give you 5 reasons why Rat is better than any other fucking band you're listening to today, all right? Wrecker, why don't you go ahead and kick us off? Bring the heat, baby.
Well, I'll start cold open and just say the main riff in Round and Round is better than the entire catalog of riffs in black metal, and it's not fucking close.
Oh my God, dude. If you didn't bring up that song, I was going to. Fucking Round and Round is so goddamn
untouchable.
Good. It's so good. It's funny because I was listening to the best of Rat today as I was working out, and that song came on, and I just fucking got jacked. I got fucking jacked, dude.
It's the body's natural parasympathetic response when it hears Rat is to get jacked.
it's truly Franny, is, man. It truly is.
I was diving into this and as to why Rat's better than your favorite band, and I'll just say Rat once entered. I can't believe this story, by the way. All these true stories. Rat once entered the wrong arena and accidentally competed in an Olympic decathlon where they cruised comfortably to victory over the heavily favored team from Ghana. Outrageous.
What the fuck?
I know. You can't make this stuff up. These are all true stories. Franny.
Wait, hold up. That's an actual story.
They actually entered the wrong arena and accidentally competed in an Olympic decathlon. Yeah, that's totally real. And so is this next reason why they're better than your favorite band. The New England Journal of Headbanging confirmed in a landmark 2018 study that perpetual headbanging syndrome is directly linked to listening to Rat no more than fucking once. And you've got it for life.
Oh, it's true, man. It's true. If you listen to even like 10 seconds of Rat, like Round and Round, Body Talk, Lay It Down, any of those fucking songs, you're hooked. You're hooked. There's no escape from their fucking juicy, riffy ass maw.
I thought this was surprising. Rat is single-handedly responsible for more unplanned pregnancies than Michael Bublé Christmas specials. That's crazy.
Oh, that's verified too by the FDA. That's 100% verified by the FDA and the CDC.
We know through advanced health outcomes matrices that this is all verifiable, people. Okay. Oh, I still, this one, I still can't get my head wrapped around, but Warren DeMartini doesn't press on guitar strings with his hands. He uses his mind to telepathically push the guitar into his fingers. Crazy.
Oh my God.
Rat is crazy.
If he's not using his mind, he's using his dick to press the fucking guitar into his fingers. It's one of the two. Or a little bit of both.
There's just a whole lot of virtuosity in this band. Because Steven Pierce's vocals on Body Talk hit so hard, the label had to pivot and package the single with complimentary NSAIDs for inflammation. You can't make this shit up. Rat is so interesting. Once Rat was dared to compare dick sizes at an adult film convention, I guess they left with multiple requests to visit the casting couch afterwards.
Oh my God.
There's a lot of reasons Rat's better than your favorite band. Apparently Chuck Norris doesn't play air guitar to Rat's music. Rat's music plays air Chuck Norris. Shocking.
Oh my God, just like a dotted outline of Chuck Norris.
Just crazy.
Oh my God. I fucking love Rat Man. They're so fucking fun. Just, and the, like, don't get me wrong, like, a lot of bands in the 80s, they had a ton of crazy ass and just super duper catchy songs and riffs. But my God, man, Rat, they fucking took the cake. There is like maybe three songs of Rat that I'm just like, meh, it's okay, right? But everything else is just a fucking banger.
I love Rat. But I mean, even the best bands don't come without, you know, warnings or shortcomings or grievances. We have gone on and on about Rat. And in my research, I could not believe I came across this old disclaimer related to listening to Rat.
Attention! If you or your loved one have been exposed to the music of Rat and are experiencing lasting symptoms of rhythm, libido increase, and godlike melodies, you may be entitled to financial compensation. You may be suffering from perpetual headbanging syndrome, PHS. Given the mass appeal of Rat, PHS is extremely common. Exposure to the music of Rat in malls, parking lots, and dive bars may have put you at risk. So don't wait. Call the Druids of Doom today for your free legal consultation and financial information packet.
It's so fucking depressing. PHS, it's such a bummer. Oh, it's a bitch. It's degenerative. There's not a lot of treatment. Yeah, that was fucking fantastic. PHS sounds awful. I've been living with it for 25 years.
It's fucking real, man. It's fucking real. I don't know how old you are when you got it, but I was probably about 10 or 11 years old.
I know exactly when I got it. I was given like a Monsters of Rock CD. Must have been about 1994. And from then on, my life has been a slow decline.
Oh, fuck, dude.
Well, Franny, that was a lot of fun. And I'm sure Rat will come up again this episode. But let's get back to the image building that we just discussed and why it was able to put a hex on the 80s. So I want to say that part of this hex placement is directly related to the live persona that the music provided, but the image contributed to. This insane concert energy. It was just a big fucking party at these shows.
Oh yeah, absolutely, man. Fucking drugs, booze, whatever you think. It was just a big debaucherous party.
It helps when your fan base isn't just nerdy fucking dudes. Also, like, a lot of people from a lot of walks of life. The whole gender spectrum was represented in this scene instead of like being 90% fucking dudes. So that was also something that helped kind of really bridge that gap and capture everybody. Everybody could get into it. And the sound just suited the time. It's just fast times. And it was engineered to be mass appeal music. Oh, and I would say, like, it launched a fucking arms race between labels to sign literally fucking anyone with a Sunset Strip sound.
Absolutely. 100%. There were so many different bands that were coming out during that time, as you said, due to like kind of like a label war going on. It was insane, the influx of bands that were coming from it.
And I say this as a death metal fan who has bought the same death metal album probably 2,000 fucking times.
Yeah.
So you like what you like. Even though that's going to be a funny. What the fuck? I can't. You try to do a podcast, just one clean shot, you're done for. It's not possible.
No, absolutely not.
It's just like, man, every episode 14 or 15, just fucking something gets stuck up in the queue. I need to hit my task manager to get back on Trask.
Oh, fuck.
The genre is not without controversies, it's not without criticisms, and if you want to really dive into a searing look at that, I would say a good place to start would be The Decline of the Western Civilization Part 2, Penelope Spheeris' epic 1988 documentary that really, on the one hand, did capture the youth and the innocence of the scene, but also captured the darkness of it. There's that infamous scene with, what's his name again from Wasp, the guitarist, Chris Holmes, I want to say.
I think it's Chris Holmes, yep.
Yeah, Wasp guitarist, and he is just so clearly out of control and giving in to his, just, I mean, man, that's as drunk loaded as you can get. And We know that this scene had a lot of fucking drug use and a lot of out of control fucking sleazy behavior. And I would imagine that a fair criticism of this genre is to say that a lot of times things probably got out of control.
Oh, absolutely, man. As you kind of noted in that documentary, you can see Chris Holmes just completely just fucking blasted in his pool or whatever. It was crazy. And then you hear like from Steven Tyler and the other guy from Aerosmith, the name escapes me right now.
Joe Perry.
Joe Perry just talking about all the stuff that they did like before they got clean. It's insane, man. It is fucking crazy.
So I think a fair criticism is on the other end of this hedonism that they so personified is a lot of addiction and a lot of personal struggle and probably a lot of trauma that's making people want to escape. So a lot of bands flat out just destroyed themselves from within due to the excess of people died. And the scene in and of itself does have a lot of moments where you thought that would have been a wake-up call for people to maybe slow down, but they unfortunately were not. And I think I'll just point out at least one of them. Franny, I think you've got a few things off your chest here too. But Vince Neil getting in a car wreck with Hanoi Rocks drummer.
Nick Dingley. He went by Razzle.
We got to honor the guy's name. So Nick Razzle unfortunately lost his life in a car wreck where Vince Neil and he had been partying their asses off. But it's not the only tragedy bespeckling this scene.
No, absolutely not. And doing some research on this episode, I was looking into that incident. And I just have to bring up the fact that after Vince Neil was convicted, he had to pay $2.6 million, which is kind of a big sum of money back then. But then he only had to do 20 days in jail and 200 hours of community service. That's fucking crazy. Like if you or I did something like that, we'd be in jail for the rest of our lives, even back then. You know what I mean? Hey, it's crazy.
Like Airheads, Jimmy Hart told me, rock stars don't go to jail. So fuck.
Oh,
sign the fucking contract. What a good movie.
Hell yeah, fucking.
Fucking Judd Nelson goes so hard.
Oh man, he plays that role perfectly, dude. Oh,
Judd Nelson so looks like he would have just fronted like a badass sludge band at some point in his life.
Oh, 100%.
Massive 100%. Fucking thick riffs.
Some other controversies and what happens during the 80s. Nikki Sixx technically died from a heroin OD.
Is he poison? I can't remember.
Motley Crue. Nikki Sixx technically died from a heroin overdose in 1987. He was dead for 2 minutes because he was partying so fucking hard. And you can read all about it in his book, The Heroin Diaries. And I highly recommend that book. It's a fucking wild ass.
You don't have to take my word for it. You can read fucking Reading Rainbow fucking pitch over here. I mean, the whole scene had its moments. Dee Snider testifying against the PMCR will always be something that actually was kind of triumphant. And he really presented himself well. You got Kiss taking off their fucking makeup. And I mean, talk about masters of shifting with the times, even if their clock sort of ran out in the 90s. But I mean, they had a pretty decent run.
Fucking Kiss took off their fucking makeup. If that isn't a sign of the times, like, I don't know what else is.
I mean,
it's fucking crazy.
Kiss starts with some straight up hard rock and eventually disco comes in. So Kiss makes a fucking disco album, essentially, pulls all those fans back. Then hair metal comes along, and Kiss is like, well, we gotta fucking take our makeup off, boys. This band is resilient as hell.
Oh my god, it's crazy how long they've endured just from kind of shifting around their style or whatever. It's insane.
Well, we're trying to keep it run a tight ship, and there's a lot more we could say, but I think it's time we bring a conclusion to this discussion and talk about the end of an era and factors that led to just the decline of this glam metal scene. And obviously market saturation played a huge role, as it always does. There's just a lot of bands that sounded very similar. And a lot of these bands also ran themselves into the fucking ground, so much so that very few emerged from the 80s with notable commercial success. So
absolutely.
It's the story we've seen over and over, whether you like hip hop, whether you like punk rock or heavy metal. The record execs get their greedy little hands on a sound, they flood the market with it, and it eventually runs its course. But that's not to say that this shit didn't shape the 80s, man.
Oh, absolutely not. As you said, it, it just kind of collapsed under the weight of its own success, as you said, through market saturation, everybody sounding the same, the greed driving it, you know, band members dying from partying too hard in excess. Like it's crazy how kind of, I don't want to say abruptly, but it, looking back in hindsight, it did kind of seem abrupt and to like the 80s glam metal genre as a whole.
Well, you know, and I think that's a perfect point about how hot and fast it burned, because frankly, when we mentioned that it placed a hex on the 80s and bringing bad luck and trouble, for me, that really manifested in how the broader culture has honestly forever since viewed heavy metal, because it was so big at that moment, mm-hmm. and so many people were paying attention to it at that moment, that now it's become ubiquitous when anyone talks about heavy metal with a normie. So just for my own personal annoyance, I feel like this whole scene is kind of left its sort of mark in the human subconscious about what is heavy metal. And we're still
absolutely
kind of recovering from that. To put a bow on it, it was a music that connected really hard with its fans. And some bands did fucking survive. There are still traces of this sound. I mean, Bon Jovi still found plenty of success. Guns N' Roses is like an institution like Walmart. They may not be making hits these days necessarily, but everybody knows Guns N' Roses, and Def Leppard to some degree, and Skid Row, they found some success in the 90s. But I want to just say as we close, Franny, that people can sometimes forget that music is okay to just be a fucking escape, to just be fun. And music that centers itself around having fun is eventually going to grow tiresome. Eventually, the party does have to stop. But that doesn't mean that every once in a while we need a fucking party. And for me, I'll always think of glam metal, hair metal, sort of fondly as a music that is just fun and gives you permission to have fun. And sometimes I need that between these black metal and death metal albums that just carotid my arteries.
Oh, 100%, man. 100%. You know, you can use, you know, glam metal as an escape from life because, like you said, it's just fun. It's fun. It's upbeat. It makes you happy to listen to. I can't agree with you more on that.
Well, Franny, that was a hell of a look into this whole scene. I'm surprised at the amount of fun I had in this research. I had partially dreaded it for a while. And apparently, I've got some glam metal tendencies, because there's a lot of riffs I was headbanging hard to. And
hell yeah.
You know, I think head-to-head, if I had to choose between the most maligned types of metal, which I would say is glam metal and nu metal, I think glam metal's coming out looking pretty fucking solid. And I like music from both genres.
I can't agree with that more. I can't describe how much fun I had with this episode. And this was probably the most fun I've had recording an episode is since we've been doing this. This was just an incredibly fun topic to research and to record. So much fun. So many crazy ass stories too, man. It's wild.
Filthy Franny, it's time to get back to basics. Let's get back to the grimy undergrowth, the moldy moss covered in all sorts of blood and sinew, and talk about some death metal. I understand you have been really looking forward to Milwaukee Metal Fest, and you're here to bring us a review, special coverage of a band that we're looking forward to. Franny, what do you got today?
All right, ladies and gentlemen. So as Record alluded to, I'm kind of going to be highlighting bands that we're going to be seeing at Milwaukee Metal Fest 2024. And for this review I got for you, we're going to be looking at Uwata's album Jin that came out in 2020, released under the label Eisenvolt, and they're out of Portland, Oregon. Do you know about Uwata? Have you dabbled in Uwata?
Love Uwata, baby. Love them.
All right, so to kind of preface this and being completely transparent, I am not the hugest black metal fan, right? I kind of get down with melodic black metal, but I'm not the biggest black metal fan. So with that under you guys' belt, I was incredibly surprised by this album. Right off the jump, I couldn't even really tell I was listening to a black metal band based off the first track, which is the title track, Jin. The guitars and the drumming are more upbeat. I don't want to say upbeat. They're more akin to something like traditional, like heavy metal or rock. They have a certain bounce and like a groove to them. And even when the lead singer Jake comes in with his vocals, it still doesn't quite fit like what you'd view as like a traditional black metal mold or even a melodic death black metal mold. It doesn't quite fit that, right? Though on the following track, that's when the room starts to get cold. You can feel the happiness and joy leave the room, and you can tell that this is a melodic as fuck black metal album. I mean, the shrieking vocals, they're there. The tremolo picking, they're there. The chest thumping double bass kicks, they're there. The muted bass, it's probably there somewhere, but I'm sure it's there too. All of these things sounds like it would make for kind of like an almost formulaic black metal experience. And as someone, as I said, who admittedly isn't the biggest black metal fan around, was astounded by this fucking album. It's crazy what they were able to
accomplish. The first time you've been into a Wonka bar, you're just like blown away.
Yeah, dude, absolutely, man. It's crazy.
Google's AI glasses on and seeing augmented reality for the first time.
Oh, it's true, man. I mean, the lead guitarist, James Sloan, on this album, he's not with the band anymore, but during this album, James Sloan, the lead guitarist, he deserves a fucking goddamn shot or something, because the way he seamlessly blended the riffs into melodies and then into solos, all without missing a beat, was fucking fantastic. I could not stop myself from kind of like just humming along with the melodies because they're so fucking catchy. They're so groovy. They're so fucking good.
Yeah, they do make a lot of fun, just like simple melodies that get stuck in your head for days.
Oh my God, it's insane. I was listening to this album. I still like listening, kind of humming to some of the melodies from like No Place Here or Gin. It's so fucking good.
I love Iwata.
They're so fucking good, man.
They're a top band for me right now.
100%. And there's no, you can't dispute that. There's no way you can dispute that. I'm so much looking forward to seeing these guys live. What else did I say, man? This album, it took me for a ride from start to finish. It kept me guessing which way the song was going to go, if they were going to kind of go towards like a traditional heavy metal route or if it was going to go more towards a black metal route. It was incredibly
satisfying.
They do satisfying.
Fucking do that to you. They'll slip into these traditional heavy metal melodies amid the black metal chaos. Yeah, I remember that did put a trance on us when we saw them live. And
it's insane.
That is their whole shtick, isn't it?
Yeah, you can't really tell which way a song's going to go. And it's so fucking satisfying to experience because it just kind of keeps your brain guessing and your ears guessing in this really nice, pleasant way. I say that in the context of a black metal album, which I realize sounds silly, but still, it's very satisfying.
That was nice.
The title track, Gin, is probably my favorite just because it's so different from what I was expecting the rest of the album to be in the best possible way. You know, for me, this is an easy 4 out of 5 Franny Packs. If you haven't checked it out, go fucking do it. You're not going to be disappointed or upset. Again, I'm not a big black metal fan, and this album fucking rules.
Hell yeah. I can't get enough of them. We've got them in Milwaukee Metal Fest, and I'm guessing you're going to be lining your ass up in the front of the fucking... right at the front of the stage, right before they get going. You're going to want to stake out a good spot for them, and I'm going to be right there next to you because we love Iwata. So thank you, Franny. Thank you for the fun. This was a hell of an episode. Drew, me stick around in about a month. We got a new episode coming out, and I'll be Houston bound. But until then, I bid you adieu, Franny. Take us fucking home.
All right. Thank you very much, everybody, for joining us on this episode of Druids of Doom. This one was so fucking fun, as Ricker alluded to. If you liked it, make sure you go to our Instagrams, follow us there and like our content, subscribe to the podcast, and leave us some fucking ratings on that shit, man. Leave us some fucking ratings. It helps the coven grow, and that's what we want for you guys, to get bigger and better. With that being said, make sure you tune in for this next episode of
Druids of Doom.